afternoon, and thanks for tuning in again to CFRC 101.9 FM. My name is, what you've tuned into is Finding a Voice, a spoken word program airing here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. And we do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And coming up on the show today in the first hour, you will... In the very final readings from it to be aired today, the 2024's Poets at Art Fest. And in the first hour, let me see where I'm at here. You're going to hear readings by, and this would have been in the next to the last session. You'll hear readings by Eric Folsom, Jordan Lane, Joel Giroux, and Julianne Okotbitek. The Poetry Festival itself is part of the Art Fest Kingston Artist Festival each year. And in the second hour, then, you're going to hear from the very final session readings by Alana Wolf, Sarah Emtage, and me. And following that, you're also going to hear a short interview, a short segment I did with Kingston artist Joanne Gervais, describing the upcoming two-day Kingston Arts Tour that's coming up, not this weekend, but next weekend, October 5th through 6th. Just my usual start of the hour announcement, and it is that occasionally some poetry, spoken word, or music played on this show may contain strong language, but all is played in its entirety with content unedited to honor the creative integrity of both the author and the piece. And so here after weeks, and I've lost track, it might be at least seven, maybe eight, and maybe even more sessions, not that many weeks, because a lot of days had, a lot of Fridays had featured two readings, but I guess that would count anyway too. So in seven or eight shows, I guess I should just say that you have heard readings from the 2024 Poets at Art Fest annual outdoor three-day festival. And now you're going to hear the very end of it, and I'm going to wrap them up this afternoon. In this first hour coming up, you are going to hear again readings by Eric Folsom, Jordan Lane, Joel Giroux, and Julianne Okotbitek. Here we go. Coming up next, Eric Folsom grew up in Reading, Massachusetts, and moved to Canada to attend McGill in 1969. Living in the Kingston area for the last 50 years, he worked at the Kingston Frontenac Public Library, edited a magazine called Next Exit, curated the Cargo Culture Reading Series, and raised two kids. He is a gender-diverse, bisexual grandfather of two. Let's bring up Eric Folsom.
Thank you. And I can't complain about the introduction because I wrote it. So, okay. So as the introduction mentions, I was born in another country, in another century, working class background, and now I'm this sort of poet thing with all the pretensions that goes with that. So I feel like, looking back at my childhood, I was like, was that really what I lived through? Anyways, I'm trying to understand it, and I've been writing about it lately. So that's what this is about. If it sounds sort of strange and foreign, it's because it is. The Church on Pickpocket Road. We were summer people, despite our ancestry, children visiting grandparents at Province Lake. Later, my sister and I returned as adults on our own to hunt for the old places like Polly's Bakery or the farmhouse where the smorgasbords used to happen, driving up the road from Wakefield to Ossipee. We stumbled across the first free will Baptist Church and pulled over because it looked familiar. Had we stopped there when we were kids? Second-growth woodland crowded close to the classic New Hampshire wood frame, white, symmetrical, square. Greek Revival common in 1856. No stained glass windows, no soaring steeple. Stone foundation made from speckled gray granite blocks. Roof gabled, a circular window near the peak. Carved wooden lintels above double sets of doors. And for the present, no way for us to enter because the stairs had gone missing. Heavy-handed metaphor, shoplifted from dreams. À la recherche du temps perdu on a T-shirt. Our Sunday school beliefs thoroughly out of reach. Apostasy of these modern secular times. The past had turned its back. No stairway, no access, even the ground floor windows just reflected sky. But it came to pass. A sign was revealed to us. National Register of Historic Places. Ah, grubby descendants, please keep out. Without looking, we sort of knew what was inside. We'd sat through enough long sermons and forgotten about hellfire once we had our bathing suits on. Tromping the twisty lane to the lake's narrow beach, towels on shoulders, chewing checkerberry leaves. Schools of bright minnows flickering between our ankles. Crayfish could be lurking beneath overturned boats. When darkness fell, there'd be supper at the campfire. Big Dipper above Green Mountain. Churches of our youth followed evident patterns. Interior walls of light blue, hard wooden pews. If there were kneelers to fold down, they weren't padded. Sometimes we knelt on the floor, rising to sing hymns. The absence of decoration, a point of pride. Statues of saints, clearly signs of idolatry. You don't have those. So we figured this old place on Pickpocket Road looked like a relative we hadn't kept track of. Old church, I'd know you anywhere. The Free Will Baptists began nearby in New Durham. Rebels who took issue with predestination and believed God allowed everyone to make choices. Folks weren't simply chosen. Their stories pre-written. Putting form to devotion, they left their old church, gathered teams of horses and oxen for hauling, quarried stone, squared the timbers, men sawed and hammered, and women kept the work crews from going hungry. No one lives by the word alone. New Hampshire was one state in a fractured country, soon to fall bleeding with war over slavery. Talk about free will. You took aim with loaded words. Free salvation sounded almost close to abolition. If we believed God was watching and judging us, that he offered grace free to every person, no matter their gender, color, or social caste, how could we think slavery was divinely ordained? Why deny each other freedom? The congregants of the old church, mostly these days, fill the mossy cemetery across the road. A tenancy shared with lichens and fallen leaves. Bones as neglected as old doctrinal disputes. I keep wondering why the place seems familiar. Did our parents pull over for a visit? Are the aging filters in my run-down brain playing mix and match among random memories? I shall have to ask my sister. Whatever the torn stitching of cause and effect, prodigal son or otherwise, I felt something. Perhaps the deity who arranges wildflowers curates us. like lilacs in a water pitcher, like daylilies beside a rustic cellar hole. The former owners having long since disappeared, we don't all flourish where history sets us down, or claim our descent from the fish who eluded black lines and red devil lures. And we can't take those license plates too seriously. The ones stamped with the old state slogan, live free or die. Odds are, we'll get the chance to do both by the end. Free will is incomplete and bluntly self-centered. The future, unwritten, is not a stable text. We change the past, and newer narratives change us. We live on the flow. We're not the calculations. Time opens and closes around us like water. And somehow, we have to learn to swim. And my mom died when I was young, and my father kept some of her books. And then when my father died, eventually, I got the books. So this is called My Mother's Browning, and it begins with an epigram from a play written by a German, Hans Joost, who was a Nazi and a poet and a playwright. In a play called Schlageter, he has a character say this line, and it's since been misquoted over and over again. When I hear culture, I release the safety on my Browning. I don't mean the Browning high power pistol from Belgium, expropriated by Nazis during the war, manufactured also by Inglis in Toronto. Or any film noir heater a woman might have owned if she'd been raised on a farm in Rowley. My mother's Browning was navy blue and cloth bound. The shorter poems of Robert Browning, edited by William Clyde Devane, the seventh printing, a textbook from Boston University days, not a 9mm gun favored by braggarts. When Dad passed away, I inherited her books, including this one, marginal notes handwritten and poetry textbooks in French, Rosetta Stones that defied comprehension until I grew up, foaming with questions no one could ever answer. A rural girl who sang harmony on Baptist hymns. Glory of imperfection, she noted in pencil, beside Robert Browning's Andrea del Sarto. God as God of love, beside the first lines of Saul. Summum bonum. Nothing can be compared to love. Love is its own reward, the last ride together. Next to Fifine at the fair, the closed quotation, love is all and death is not, is underscored twice. And written at the end of Rabbi Ben Ezra, harder the life, the more beautiful the cup. Grow old along with me, the best is yet to be. The phrases are shop-worn, tarnished by the decades. Have been circled, and then exam scrawled at the top. Lower down, darkly underlined. Youth shows but half. She died of breast cancer when she was 34. And this is about the early part of my childhood in a little town called Wakefield. And I used to think that nobody famous came from Wakefield. It's Wakefield. Melody Ranch. You were a teenage girl attending Wakefield High. I was a child in a Hamilton Road duplex. We were born 11 years apart. We'd never have met, but shared the sounds and sights of a 1950s town. Winter skaters spinning on Lake Quanapowit. Park snows, the town common, the Beebe Library. A 4th of July parade every summer. Brass bands blurting out John Philip Sousa marches. Baton-twirling majorettes. Cowboys on horses. Behind our duplex, steel rails on a gravel bed carried strings of 36-foot rolling boxcars, declaring the boundary of our small backyard. A block away, the nonstop hum of transformers. A big elm one fall blew down in a hurricane. Probably Carol, though it might have been Edna. Rain splashed hard on our front window, but I felt safe. And you, the guitar girl who lived over on Prospect, could you feel how a narrow town makes women strange? Not far from my place, on water near Jefferson, sat a small music store called Melody Ranch. Its name plucked from Gene Autry's movie screen home. A jewel box of sheet music and record players, record albums, violins, and accordions, while separate at the back, a glass-paneled booth allowed you to record songs and hear your own voice. Wakefield told us to get out of town while we could. The kids at school called you Beverly. But later, at UMass Amherst, your new friends called you Buffy. For this poem, I designate you culture bearer, crosser of boundaries, challenger of limits. Heading for places like Yorkville in Toronto, where they don't dress up as blonde cowgirls in sequins. Culture bearer needs to drop stones in the pond, and the ripples will spread out for generations. Leading up to the door on my side of the duplex was a stepping stone path built from slabs of fieldstone, sharp edges of slate, just begging to be picked up. So I lifted one and beheld my inner life. Abrupt inland sea flooding my cupped palm with red throbbing intrigue, the novelty of pain. I snapped out of it, then ran to find Mama. But my palm, ever after, had that extra line. Old prophecies void. I've lived a different life. I used to think nobody famous ever came from the towns I grew up in. If we disguised ourselves, we could sneak past the guards. But a nightmare twist. Our makeup doesn't rub off. And who really owned the ground beneath Melody Ranch? We pushed hard to escape. The world pushed us right back. All we really had riding that train out of town was a song in our pockets, like a sharp-edged stone.
Let's give Eric another hand. Up next, Jordan Lane is a Jamaican-born Canadian poet and scholar. He lives in Cataraqui, Kingston, on the territory of the Anishinaabeg, Haudenosaunee, and Huron-Wendat peoples with his family, his dog, and cats. He is a doctoral candidate at Queen's University. His poetry has appeared in Event Magazine and the Lamp Journal, and his criticism at the Journal of West Indian Literature. Let's bring up, here he is. Let's bring him up. Here's Jordan.
Thanks to Bruce, and thanks for organizing everything. It's a really, really great event. I'm very happy to be a part of this event. So, yeah. So I have about 7 poems. I'm going to start with this one I wrote for my father when I took a recent, more or less recent, maybe like a year or so ago, actually, trip to Jamaica. He told me a story about how he, him and his brother went searching for bananas, crossing a river into where his uncle is from, or where his father is from. This one's called River Crossing. My father, time and again, with the browns of his marvelous eyes, wide with his own amazement, would tell me the story of how my grandfather asked him and my uncle to cross that rolling river to Bellevue Estate, to bring back heavy bunches of banana, hands outstretched in gesture, down from the short trees on which they grew with their tatty sheaves and blue tags for harvest. Often, I think of the necessity that brought them there, when food and money was scarce, when the force that provided for his family who hefted his toolbox by bicycle up many a winding and inclining mile could find no carpentry work. He would send these boys as green as the leaves they were in search of to Bellevue. I sometimes, in the browns of my own eyes, see the river churning as if set aboil by some mystic fire burning upstream. My father, leaning down on his haunches, testing his palm against the surface of the river like a water bug, while my uncle, with hand over brow, searched for the best crossing. They find a space they might pass over the current, then press cold feet over motley of stones underneath the river's sapphire blooms, mild for grown men, but dangerous for these courageous boys. Once, my father told me, he was carried by the river, almost drowned, though it was not too deep, and he made it barely across. Then, they were peering into a whole heap of bush, cutting through where they couldn't have squeezed their young bodies through, to the plantation where my father, my grandfather, come from. There, they eye for the joyful, weary yellowness of heavy banana. Hands, wrists tied in gold and blue flags, they climb briefly to bring down to earth these fruits of labor that would help their large family ease the burden of belt-tightening times. On their return, there would be no trumpets for having braved the bush and river twice. Just the scant knowing that they helped their family dodge the strife by so many undeserved. When years later we return to that river they crossed, the belated celebration comes swimming the blue cold as if broiled by some mystic fire. We eat yellow heart breadfruit and jerk fish, and I swim myself against a drift not so swift nor so strong, just to test the strokes I remember, the time my father was almost lost, and I thank these gentle waters of the crossing as we dry in the sun, and my uncle, towel wrapped round shoulders, speaks like a prophet standing on high stones, of the pains of hastening age, and how he daily meets the challenge to cross them like that nearby river that, when he was a green boy, he moved against a current. This next one went through a few titles. Right now I'm calling it Marked Time, after Tolu Oloruntoba. Careful what you find in feral map, adrenal harbor of open casket heart. I see my old self resting there, atrium pooling rust water, burning like gin. What cuts us makes us strong, with vital lesson about intimacy with edges. To bear the story of your life's blade is to know taxation of clock and calendar. A regime to pull teeth for, I'd give many a bloody root to chances gone by. For now, my smile is endurance earned, uncheckered, where I will beg hours no longer. Thank you. This one is called Dry Season. I wrote this after a period of not being able to write for a while. So that's why it feels like a bit of a dry season when that happens. It has two parts, and I'll start with the first here. I have lived in a land of a go, with its never-wheeling sun, wished for clouds on lips that can no longer muster spittle to sing what remains of chapped verse. I did it once, twice, crumpled foiled words into music, sent them, winged messengers, to their end, to their glorious end, without listeners' ears to coat supple with vision, just panting hustle of lungs, yoked to prayer, please. Smash this drought with water hammer, flood this land. Make rafts of inching dragwood, slow as beetles, and let fly. At my feet are my dust-walloped wishes. Take your words and stretch them now, wah. Stretch them and dry them in a de sauna. Tie them and knot them round the wood, ah. Plank them, pull them, and weave them. Find what is left betwixt and between. Cut them and stand them on your stranded bark. Bring your hand them over your eye. And look to the land of a go. Set your raft upon a mirage. See it fulfill its promise. See the way it turn, the way it turn. See it glide, it a glide. Like you a fly, over the hot sand.
Thank you. Thank you.
This one is called Man of War. Its sails crack and billow under the breeze. The prodding children pause, armed with sun-bleached sticks, listening for the smart of reproach. But the words for which this ship and its crew sacrificed their lives are too small, too cellular. Besides, who has the eyes to read the message furled in the mouth of the bottle, or read history etched in crystal membrane? So they move on to the next carcass, unimpressed with the stillness they mistake for silence.
Okay.
I'm looking for time. Okay. Good. So I have three more. This one is called Seven Pharmaceutical Acrostics. So they're named after psychiatric medications. And there are single words. They're acrostics, but they're each line is a single word. So I had to find some very, I guess, unorthodox or very interesting words to sort of fill them out. This first one is called. This first one is for olanzapine. Orations lose all narrative, zoning appropriate pretenders into notched empires. This next one is paliperidone. Poxes adorn lordlings in palaces. Emperors reel in dances. Obviously never enough. This is sertraline. Sectarian effluvium rises toward revolutionary axes. Losses inhabit noxious emptiness. This is lithium. Lacuna-inspired threats herald inveterate ululations moot. This is chlorpromazine. Carousals hairy lower order Ronin, pressing revenge onto myopic axioms. Zeal inks new expressions. This one is lorazepam. Larks order retractions against Zephyr's ever-pacing, artless mockery. And this one is Venlafaxine. Veneration enters. Next, limbing. Approximation fosters arresting xylographs. Imitation nigh erogenous. There's two more short ones. Is that, are we still good for time? This one's called Broken Bulb. Cracked coil, no voice from winding petals, flame, just brood maps and roads, burning ties that never break, dread ink and toil of pages, inward boils of hatred. Despair made less of me, as rooms do of dwelling, my hearts become large, but depressurized. Crude oil covers my dreams, and feathers of fiat. All come still and trapped, head in dancing light. And then I have, I've got one more. This one's a very short one. It's called Two Sides. Can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Civilization, barbarity. How long must that coin be hammered into the rails before we recognize its cartoonish dimensions? And that's everything. Thank you. Thank you.
Let's give Jordan another hand. Up next, Joel Giroux grew up in Charbot Lake, Ontario, and lived in Toronto and environs for many years before making his way back to this area in 2022. He has worked in many fields, but now stands behind the counter at Novel Idea Bookstore in Kingston, Ontario, has had work published in Victoria College Review and Quarantine Review, and most recently in More Than a Gathering. He plugs away at poems and songs during the day before the real world beckons him away. Let's bring up Joel Giroux.
Oh, thank you so much, Bruce. I just want to point out, it's been pointed out many times during this weekend, but what an extraordinary thing that you are doing. Every year, it just gets bigger and bigger. And it's just a wonderful event. And it's magical every time. So, because I like to work quickly, I started this poem 20 years ago. And it's almost finished. So this is a response to this particular poet, Al Moritz, A.F. Moritz, who... I was very blessed to become a member of his workshop in Toronto. It's called the Algonquin Square Table. It was just a marvelous thing to be able to sit at a table with that particular poet who chaired a wonderful workshop. And his work, it's sort of like he kind of... bypassed or just drove right over top of postmodernism. He still contends in a very romantic, style. He's very meditative, very figurative, and prophetic. So this poem, The Singing Cloud, is the response, but I want to read a poem of his to start. This is called The Corn. The corn seen far away is the new ocean, gold, and we have made it. It flows out to the earth's edge, bearing unseen ships full of hunger to the sky. Or be among the corn with a scythe, happy and overwhelmed in your slaughter of all those green soldiers that fall impassively They wear out the conqueror. You can hear their taunts, clear maxims, offering their bodies for your salvation, saying, "We are your slaves. You made us. End us." They know they will always be reborn in triumph. Their murderer himself must nurture them. A field of corn full grown around your house is a ragged wall. Convolvulus flowers blaring among the first row of stalks define the world's end, the edges of the yard. Whatever is behind the corn, mere space or heaven, the zone where God permits himself free and pure action, or nothing, you can't see it. Or from a high window, look across corn's surface, closed and unmirroring. Silk, swollen sheaths, green flash. To roofs and silos, signs of people but stilled and darkened, made things of earth by the long waiting nurture of this moist light. Or drive in the dust, straight roads cut through the corn, dry, its leaves clicking, and locust song. What is within there? One August, oppressed by the veil, I parted the leaves to see. It was the kingdom of the spiderweb. Stillness, silence, the lanes ran on without end. Rows and columns of the rigid stalks, rows and columns of dry space between them. Hard, polished, narrow halls, unswept but bare, cracking with age, and up in brittle rafters, the webs, all but one abandoned, and the one spider waiting, gold and black, a sun. All else dead, and so unlike the grass, there at last I could have forgotten nature, except that I suddenly knew the thresher might come. There was nothing to tell the eye of the green earth, but I remembered the machine might come and find me there, was coming at any moment, whirling its blades to mix me with the corn. So, yeah. He's a pretty fabulous poet. So this poem, The Singing Cloud, the thing in nature, the element of nature that is itself the primary poet. Is this a thing? The Singing Cloud. One. The singing cloud hangs again today above me, but I cannot hear its song. It's a diaphanous face in a mirror, mouthing words only the lake below my boat can make out. I am full of envy and sadness. I will not overturn my boat to drown. I will put my oar in the water and listen to the split sounds of the only gift I've ever really prayed for. Me in my boat, peering over the bow's lip. A boy believing he floats the sky, passing above a world of water wherein he also floats. His own double, a boy in a cloud mouthing whatever sounds the lake might echo back to him, who longs to hear the singing cloud sing, whose song is older than any melody human voices might bring. Two. The singing cloud takes up the song she once lost to the faceless, jealous spirits who leave their measured droppings among the leaves of a spontaneous book left open always to lyrical passages reframing memory into something it never was but longed to be. Beyond the paginated melodies, the singing cloud claimed were her own, unplanned. Never before rehearsed refrains, she taught the woods below her to sing. I was a broken reed in the marsh that edged the forest, where even the insects learned to sing her songs. I would go back there once again, if only to prove the music lived. In the air between the marsh's green mouth and the living cloud that wept for something it could not believe in, but only dream of. 3. The singing cloud brings its watery heft to the horizon's oblong neck and drops it in a perforated sheet of eighth notes that pop and click upon each bird's beak and fervent, tremulous leaf. The sun glides through like a lover who haunts the halls of memory, looking to be released strophe by strophe and line by line, until this lover's song of longing is complete. The verses stand, the verses fall, and the singing cloud gathers up her beads of rain to stall again on each and every swollen leaf and head poking out from blossoming bushes, hunched over like clandestine lovers caught in the act of discovering that it's not the birds who taught us how to sing, but our own need to call. 4. The singing cloud hauled her weight until she stopped above a city's ruins. Below her, the streets and alleys were less the lines of veins and limbs a poet might mistake for human bodies, but instead android parts, splayed and confused after the terrors of civil war and living nightmare daily. Without cease, the singing cloud could not stop her ringing, the wash of her grief into sheets that sliced the air like crackling flags that announced partisan surveillance, the tricks of a sick state that loathed its people, a state now no more than empty streets echoing silence back to the skies. The singing cloud makes her last notes and leaves the scene, forever changed, resigned. 5. The singing cloud was less a form of observation and more a song of praise made of hydrogen particles congealed inside oxygen's whimsical embrace. None of this mattered to those of us on the ground, waiting for the singing cloud to open her craw and yawn loudly, her long beams of spittle to catch the screech of sunlight down to earth, where we lay, barely concealed by huge willows, entranced by the swinging arcs of green the tree rained down upon us out of pity or ambivalence or longing. The singing cloud thinks of nothing but her own demise, trapped between the branches of trees that cling to musical staves, still fingering the melodies she lets fall from her mouth as she dies so quietly. The wind inhales her, drop by drop, just to appease her sense of self, now fallen to bolts of music that cannot stop to make sound until every mouth opens, until all the melodies are released, repeat, reply. 6. The singing cloud lost its sense of melody, but gained it back rolling her shadows over the rocks and lakes of my hallowed hometown, christening it, caressing it, handling it fondly like a love letter never sent. The singing cloud couldn't give us what we longed for, constant rain, heavy as melodies entwined upon twisting staves, which left us nothing but longing for weight, the wet heft of memory, although memory wasn't enough to carry us through the dry pages of our drought. Where the singing cloud went, it was as if we had never been. 7. Afterwards, it was her wet melodies, somehow both ascending and descending rails of air, which we thought we could hold on to. Traipsing weightless steps up into a heaven only revealed when the singing cloud, plump with rain, released in heavy sheets her ample weight and height, her body wide as a divine landscape. 8. When the singing cloud fell silent, there was nothing left to hear but the noise of impatient blades of grass, trembling at the thought of a being that is always water, always about to burst, and shards of wet that keep the light only to break it apart. What the singing cloud sang still lives underground as a sopping memory. Only the trees remember how to sing. Only those who fell under the singing cloud's shadow, who were shifted for good into beings fattened on its flashing streaks of invisible light. The singing cloud drenched all things, then took flight. Thank you.
Give Joel another hand. Up next, Julianne Okotbitek writes fiction and poetry. Julianne's poetry has been shortlisted and won several writing prizes, including the Dorothy Livesay Poetry Prize and the Glenna Lushai. Okay, prize for African poetry. Her first novel, We, The Kindling, is out with Alchemy, an imprint of NOMP Canada. She teaches in the English and Gender Studies departments at Queen University. Let's bring her to the stand.
Thank you. Thank you. It's really awesome to be here because this is my first time at Arts Fest. Been here since 2021, and I've been hearing about it, but Bruce, thank you for inviting me. And I came here on Saturday, and it was a really cool crowd to be, so I'm really glad to be able to come today. And thank you, everyone, for coming. I have one poem. Since the year started, Joel, thank you for your example. Since the year started, I've written two poems, and this one is one of them. So it's going to have to last the 12 minutes. Okay. It is a poem that I think started in 2014, so not quite 20 years. When I was writing 100 Days, which was my first book of poetry, I had written 99 by the time I was submitting it for publication, and they said, well, if you're calling it 100 Days, really there should be 100 poems. So the one that came was about a boy, and it was completely different from all the other poems because I didn't write it within the 100 days. And it is day 66. And I thought I'd bring it and read it, and then I thought that would kind of overshadow this one, so I'll just read it for itself. And the reason why I'm talking about that poem, can everyone hear me? Okay. The reason why I'm talking about that poem is that the boy in that poem showed up again, and that's in this poem that I'm reading. So it won't quite be 12 minutes, but I think that's okay. If we're still counting days, it is day 182, or day whatever it is, since we started counting days, like steps, like ladders to nowhere. Headlines pour out the sides of the computer screen, and I catch them and collect spilled words like milk, in a large vase, on a coffee table, in the living room, at home. And the sky, every day the sky, every single day, blue, mostly bright deep blue, like today. Sometimes clouded over, sometimes gray, sometimes a Milky Way from a night sky. A boy I wrote about in a poem dissolves, as if he hadn't been here, a person just here, just now. Boom. Boom. The page is blank. From that war, that war, that war, that war that I'm thinking about that is not today or 182 days ago when this thing started. Boom. Boom. The young man appears among the rubble. Boom. Boom. He looks at me directly as if to say, now what? Now what? What is your responsibility to us? Say cloud. Say sky. Say boy. Say blue. Say every day. Say poem. Say sometimes. Say ladders. Say flowers. Say love. Say kite. Say sky again. Say mother. Say God. Say mother again. Say anthill. Say bread. Say hiccup. Say mask. Say hello. Say goodbye. Say why. Say what. Words on a pile on a Sunday afternoon. Set them aflame. Set them aflame. Set them all on fire. If none of them can even begin to contemplate this one, this ours, this boy with his love, this boy with his life, this boy who was just here, just now. Say the boy was a flower. Say the boy was love. What now? What now? What now is your responsibility to us? Thank you.
And let's give Julianne one more hand.
And it is almost 53 minutes after 4 o'clock. And from the poets at Art Fest 10, our 10th annual three-day outdoor festival held this past July 1st weekend. You heard from, again, the mid-afternoon session of the final day readings by Eric Folsom, Jordan Lane, Joel Giroux, and Julianne Okot-Bitek. Tell you what, let's do this, and I will be right back.
Join conversations that cross generations at Kingston Writers Fest, September 25th through 29th, 2024. Enjoy engaging discussions and readings with renowned Canadian authors in onstage author events, writer's studio masterclasses, and special gatherings surrounding the stories and topics that matter to you, like renowned Canadian authors Danny Ramadan, Helen Humphreys, Vincent Anioke, Carol Off, Lisa Moore, and MJ Vasanji, alongside a trivia night, brunches and lunches, an open mic in a cabaret-style evening in honor of Stephen Hyten. For more information, festival passes, and single event tickets, check out kingstonwritersfest.ca. Student pricing for many events is available.
Two out of three geese. Six out of seven seagulls. And this Transylvanian owl all agree that if they had their own radios, they would tune in to CFRC 101.9 FM. Broadcasting just for you from Kingston, Ontario, Canada.
Our house is a very, very
late in the 1970s, four Kingston women got together to discuss the idea of creating a community house, a place where grassroots organizations, families, and groups could gather, a place where food could be prepared and shared, new skills could be learned, and lively discussion could be encouraged. For over 30 years, Kingston Community House has provided low-cost meeting space for hundreds of groups, allowing people to come together to learn from one another, share resources, and trade skills. As it becomes safe once again to gather in person, we look forward to providing the Kingston community with a comfortable and convenient place to reconnect with one another. Located in downtown Kingston, we operate 7 days a week. For more information on Kingston Community House and how to book, please visit kingstoncommunityhouse.org.
Friday evenings at 6 p.m. here on CFRC, listen to Saltwater Music, a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast of Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Carnell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic and 7:30 Newfoundland.
And just the volume here a little bit. You are, and the mic apparently, you are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM, located here in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I am here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock, and we do stream live online at www.cfrc.ca. And first, a heartfelt thanks to all of you out there for tuning in to this first hour today. I hope you can stay tuned for the second. And an equal thanks to each of the poets, Eric Folsom, Jordan Lane, Joel Giroux, and Julianne Okot-Bitek, for their wonderful readings. And again, to all those too, and all those nameless other, but all have names and are important to came out, all who came out to support all of those readings. Just one other thing I always mention at the end of each hour, and it is that just a reminder that every week, both hours of this show are uploaded to my blog space, my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com. Will remain there for 4 years. I've got just a couple of minutes here before we slide into the second hour, just to plug a couple of things. There are some events coming up on October 1st, so this coming Tuesday. It is this month's open mic reading series in the End the Journey Continues open mic reading series, always held at the Elm Cafe on the corner of Charles and Montreal Street. Doors open at 6:30. Event runs from 7 till about 9:15 p.m. Also for those closer to the Madoc area, the First Tuesday Muse is another First Tuesday night of the month open mic held there, and with host TJ Best. Check out their Facebook page. They have a Facebook group page for info and updates. It's held, I believe, now at Finn's Pub and Patio, which is at 231 Durham Street. And for just a minute and a half here, I am going to tell you I have pretty much spent the last day and a half at, a day and a bit, to be fair. Well, I know it's been that. At Kingston Writers Fest. Yeah. For those of you in the area, if you haven't been or haven't thought about going, I would highly suggest you find out. I've been to already five incredible events. They've got a ton more coming up. Please just visit their website, www.kingstonwritersfest.ca. They've got a lot of options for ticket pricing. They're trying to make it as affordable as possible this year. It is held mostly at the screening room, but there are some offsite events. There is one coming up this evening that I'll be going to. Tanya Talaga with will be doing a reading at what is now the Market Square. I believe it's called the Market Square Hotel. I think that's it. Anyway, it's the Marriott. Going to be the Marriott. Is the Marriott. And it's just a block down from Market Square, right on King Street. So anyway, there is one offsite event tonight.